Well, hello, friends. Here we are again. And we are beginning with Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 82 in Section A, the first section. We have been seeing that no crisis of a certain kind is occurring in either Aries or Libra. In most of the other constellations, we are told, at some stage or other, there comes a point of crisis, wherein the effect of the energy pouring through the sign, via the ruling planets, to man, is at its highest point of effectiveness. It's going to create a change. The crisis is the necessity for a change of the status quo. It cannot persist in the state of tension, the particular state of configuration in which it exists. The energies are required to change their configuration. So this in time precipitates the crisis, which is required to release the man from the planetary influences which condition his personality and bring him more definitely and consciously under the sign of the zodiac. And presumably that's going to condition more his soul. But in Libra, there is no such point of crisis any more than there is in Aries. There is only an interlude of balance as a prelude to a more effective and sensitive progress upon the path. An interlude of balance as a prelude. And this balance, this interlude, is of course important because more effective service will follow. It is the same in Aries. As it is esoterically said, before creation, silence, and the stillness of a focus point. Now, in a way, each hemicycle of the zodiac, one of which Aries begins, the other of which Libra begins, is a stage, or offers the opportunity for creation, a stage of creation. So this applies, he says, to both Aries and to Libra. The one in a cosmic and creative sense, he connects this with Aries, ruling the cosmic Christ, the Lamb slain from the foundations of the world, and the other in an individual and progressive evolutionary sense, taking the individual into a state of group consciousness, where the soul can begin to dominate, to be more effective, where the balance is disturbed. There is a state of meditation before the great cosmic creation, and the thrust forward of Aries disturbs this interior meditative resolution and starts what is determined within this meditative phase upon its path of unfoldment. For the individual, there is also a stage of interior weighing of values, and when the scale tips, if it tips towards group consciousness, towards soul consciousness, i.e. towards the tests of Scorpio, which will establish more firmly group and soul consciousness, then there is a movement forward into an entirely different stage of creative activity, one in which the soul can express itself and thus express an aspect of the divine plan. So we're on page 248 here, beginning Esoteric Astrology 82. The following planets and their rays govern the cardinal cross, of which Libra is one of the points. So we're looking at all of the rulers of the cardinal cross. We see that because Mars, Mercury, and Uranus are respectively the orthodox, esoteric, and hierarchical rulers of Aries. So Mars gives us the sixth ray and its idealism and its devotion, which I suppose leads to struggle, because if you hold devotedly to a particular ideal, all that which opposes the ideal will be brought to bear, and you will find yourself in a struggle. Every idealist bringing a true and high ideal to the world finds a struggle with the pre-existent conditions, the forces which are configured in such a way that the ideal cannot easily express itself. The esoteric ruler, Mercury, fourth ray, harmony through conflict, okay. Mercury is called the star of conflict, the sometimes. You might think that Mars would take its position, but Mercury really has to deal with the polarities and shuttles between them and tries to bring them eventually into some sort of reconciliation, but there is initial friction between the poles, of course. Uranus, the seventh ray, ceremonial order, law and magic. Venus is the ruler of Libra. And Venus, yes, Venus is the ruler of Libra in the exoteric or orthodox sense, giving us, from its fifth ray perspective at least, concrete knowledge or science. Saturn is the hierarchical ruler of Libra. It seems rather interesting. He's going from Aries to Libra rather than in a sequential order. Saturn conveying active intelligence. Neptune is both the esoteric and hierarchical ruler of Cancer. Again, he's using these words in relation to the ray and not so much the planet. He calls it, again, idealism, devotion, and struggle. This will always be a ray in which struggle is found, though the struggle is meant to dominate over conditions rather than to come in harmonious accord with them. We notice also that Venus is the hierarchical ruler of Capricorn, and that Saturn is the esoteric and orthodox ruler of Capricorn. So he goes in this way. He goes in a way from Aries to Libra, and then from Capricorn to Cancer. So we have two instances of ray 6, one of ray 4, one of ray 7, one of ray 5, one of ray 3. We have 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, interestingly, for a cross, which is introduces the consciousness to a cosmic field. We don't have the second and the first ray. And perhaps he will explain why this is so. Perhaps it is the cross itself which has these great occult rays, the two rays placed above the Brahmic five, and they must express themselves through these Brahmic five, the five of the third aspect of the Holy Spirit, the five of the previous solar system. So here we have, he tells us, six planets and five rays of energy. The sixth ray given twice. And the expression of the two lines of spiritual energy, and love wisdom in two of the rays, that is the fourth and the sixth, and planets, and three of the rays and planets upon the first major stream of energy, will of power. Isn't it interesting, though, that essentially, in a way, there are only two lines of energy, and maybe, in a way, only two rays. Everything else derivative from them. So that even though the first and second ray are not mentioned here, we have them represented through the lesser rays, which are on their line. So the first and second rays are surely represented. You will note how three of these rays definitely predispose the Libran subject to concrete understanding. Now, you know, again, I have to say, we speak of the Libran, the Libran subject when we're talking about the cardinal cross, but whatever we say of Libra in this regard, we might have to say of any of the signs found upon this cardinal cross. Now, it is true, interestingly, that the three rays represented here, 3, 5, and 7, are exactly those rays which come through Libra. So, let's just say that the cardinal cross does not add any new rays to the ones already found in Libra. And interestingly enough, the, well, I guess, I suppose we could say that from Capricorn comes a third ray, but it's already in Libra. From Venus comes a fifth ray, but it's already in Capricorn, in the hierarchical position. So the two signs, Libra and Capricorn, are adding only hardline rays, and whatever rays are found in Libra, no other additional rays are found on this cardinal cross. The first ray is not found, except if we would look at the perhaps some of the higher rays of the planets represented here, for instance, their monadic ray, the first in the case of Uranus. So three of the rays definitely predispose the Libran subject to concrete understanding, that's the fifth, to intelligent will, which is the third, and to knowledge, again the fifth. So, one of these, concrete understanding, well, intelligent will, the seventh ray has to be represented here. So, among one of these descriptors, concrete understanding, intelligent will, or knowledge, the seventh ray is being described. How should we understand the particular descriptor which is to be assigned to the seventh ray? Perhaps intelligent will? The first ray, functioning through the third and fifth rays, the first ray functioning through the third and fifth rays, the fifth ray and the third ray. Now, maybe he's only discussing concrete understanding and the intelligence of the fifth of the third ray in combination with will, which is pouring through the entire hard line, and to knowledge, which is a fifth ray factor, but maybe he's also associating it with the third. The first ray functioning through the third and fifth rays, the fifth ray and the third ray. Why doesn't he mention the seventh in this case? Hence the effectiveness of Libra upon the physical plane, because in order to be effective upon the physical plane, you will have to be working with the hard line rays. These are the rays which can really make a difference in the world of matter and can more easily dominate matter than 2, 4, or 6. Hence the effectiveness of Libra upon the physical plane and the power of the developed Libran to project the inner spiritual purpose, I suppose that's the first ray, or intended will, into physical expression via 3, 5, and 7. Although 7 is not specifically represented above. Interestingly, he talks about 1, 5, and 3, but not the 7. An instance of a person equipped to do this can be seen in H.P. Blavatsky, and I'm trying to think of her chart. She had Venus and the moon in Libra. She had Cancer rising. Maybe we can go to her chart here. Just take a moment and take a quick look. So this is the chart of HPB, the usually accepted chart, and she does have all the cardinal signs represented. Interestingly enough, she's kind of on the cardinal cross here, although it's not exact oppositions and squares, but still every cardinal sign is tenanted with Pluto in Aries, Venus and the Moon in Libra, Cancer rising with some asteroids, but what's important is that Cancer is rising, and Neptune in Capricorn. Now, many people interpreting this have said that he is calling HPB a Libran. Now, we don't know, is he speaking somehow of a sign associated with her soul? Because what may be the true sign of the causal body, the abiding sign, either a sun sign or a rising sign or both, may be different from what the personality horoscope shows. So the effectiveness of Libra upon the physical plane is associated with H.P. Blavatsky. She does have Venus in Libra, and Venus is one of those planets being discussed as a ruler of Libra and also of Capricorn. And he seems to be calling her a developed Libran. She is a cardinal cross person, quite strongly, and a developed Libran. Why is he calling her a developed Libran? Well, it seems that he could only do that if there was something fundamental about her nature, which was Libra. Now, the only thing we have is Venus and the Moon. The Moon is, in a way, the ruler of the Ascendant, also in Libra, so it's very important as a ruler. This is enigmatic. There are no planets. Well, let's see, if she's sidereally having the planets Venus and the Moon in Virgo. So she's not a sidereal Libra. There's nothing here that would move any of her planets into Libra sidereally, and certainly her sun is not there sidereally. She's a sidereal Cancer, pretty much. And her ascending sign is more or less sidereal Gemini. I'd have to work that out exactly. It depends on what the Ionamsha would be at her time of birth. We could do that, but she's not a sidereal Libra, so perhaps this is simply having to do with these two planets in Libra and their importance as the planet of the soul and of the personality, Venus and the Moon, respectively, and her place upon the cardinal cross, with the possible hint that it is Libra that has much to do with her soul, whereas in the chart of Hitler, it's Leo that has much to do with his soul. And DK said he has not studied Hitler's personal horoscope, in which there is one Leo planet, elevated, Saturn. But apparently he's not talking about that. Now, from another point of view, his conception chart could have been in Leo, since he was born in Taurus, and there's a nine-month difference there. There are some tantalizing hints here, which serve as puzzles for astrological students like ourselves. We can come up with some speculations of what he means, but we don't really see why HBB should be called, or it should be hinted that she is a developed Libran per se. She's really a Leo, Cancer rising, and the monadic sign, which would be important for her, would be Capricorn. So why? And no, not Capricorn, excuse me, Aquarius. Why then the developed Libra? Okay, we'll have to leave that to the wiser astrologers coming on ahead, and to hierarchical inspiration, and for to the time when it may be possible to detect what is the horoscope of the soul. Would be most interesting to discover that sign, or those two signs, let us say, sort of a sun sign and rising sign, with which we as souls are most identified. In this sign, Saturn is exalted at the point of balance. For at the point of balance, opportunity comes. And a situation is staged, I guess all of this is being staged by the soul's solar angel over a long evolutionary period. A situation is staged which makes a choice and a determination inevitable. One cannot remain in a tentative, inconclusive state. At the point of balance, there is going to be a movement in one direction or another, either towards Virgo or towards Scorpio. Also, I suppose, for a time, a kind of static, motionless condition may be preserved. It is a choice which has to be made intelligently. There's our third and fifth ray, because Libra is a very intelligent sign, or a sign which, let us say, promotes intelligence, with the third ray coming through it constellationally, and the fifth ray of Venus and the third ray of Saturn representing that greater constellational lord working through the sign, the lesser planetary lords upon the third and fifth ray represented. And of course, Uranus too is a planet of great intelligence. He stopped mentioning that at this point for some reason. It is a choice which has to be made intelligently upon the physical plane in the waking brain consciousness. And what's interesting is that Saturn is said to be associated with the brain, particularly. Saturn also with the consciousness of the personality, just as in a way Jupiter with the consciousness of the soul. Because Saturn is generically on the third ray, and so is the personality, and Jupiter is generically on the second ray, and so is the soul. So Saturn, third ray personality, Jupiter, second ray soul. Saturn brings us right down into the material world of form, and in a way, during the interlude of incarnation, confines our consciousness to that type of sensory perception, aided and abetted by Mars. So we're coming right down onto the physical plane, which the hardline rays of Libra incline us to do, and making a choice which will be physically effective, which will be determining the way we live our physical life, either submitting to the tests of Scorpio right down on the physical plane, or becoming materially engrossed again, simply as personalities, under the lower influence of Virgo. It is only now that the full purpose and the work of Saturn for humanity can reach a point of group usefulness. I suppose, obviously, its purpose, in some measure, has been with us all along, as the law of karma has been our guide, and Saturn is planetarily the strongest of the karmic lords, the most exacting of the karmic lords. But now, Saturn can help us enter the phase of group consciousness, into which Libra can precipitate the individual. I mean, if we're going to have the two, which Libra will attempt to bring together, we have the fundamental constituent of the group. So we are coming into a period of initiation for quite a number of human beings. Capricorn is involved, as Saturn is one of the rulers there. A choice, a conscious choice, is being made because humanity in this Aryan age is now capable of a greater degree of mental focus and less likely to be carried away by the impulses of the astral plane. Okay, so there was a little interruption there. Sorry for that. We were speaking about the choice that has to be made intelligently upon the physical plane. In the waking brain consciousness, which of course is the way initiation as well must be taken, in the waking brain consciousness. And it's only now at this point in human history preparing for the first initiation, with naturally Saturn becoming very, very strong, because that first initiation is in a way ruled by Capricorn. It's only now that the full purpose and the work of Saturn for humanity can reach a point of group usefulness, because it is the group consciousness which is entered as initiation, as the process of initiation is entered. For it is only now that humanity has reached a point of general and widespread intelligence. There's your third ray, and there is Saturn. Saturn cannot really be used consciously until there is self-consciousness and intelligence, and a sufficiently wide intelligence for many human beings to use to make this kind of choice. General and widespread intelligence which can make any choice a definite conscious act rather than simply following the promptings of desire, because many choices are in a way made unconsciously, simply by following the general vector of feeling which predominates at any particular point. But when one consciously focuses in the mind and makes a definite choice, responsibility is entailed. So it is only now that humanity has reached a point of general and widespread intelligence which can make any choice a definite conscious act entailing responsibility. Animals have no responsibility for their apparent choices. They suffer karmic consequences, of course, but it's all on the unconscious level. They generally follow their instincts and their promptings. But when a human being deliberately deliberates from a point of stillness and tries to weigh up the various consequences of an act and consciously chooses that act on the basis of what is seen and on the basis of the mind, rather than, let's say, spontaneously following feelings, then responsibility is indeed entailed. Now, some might argue that even after all the weighing, it is after all the feelings and even maybe the intuition that prompts the final direction of the choice. That has to be examined. There are some who believe that all is determined, and even though we may use our minds apparently in making a choice, it is ultimately not the mind that makes the choice, but fate. And the general configuration of all relationships, which inclines in an irresistible direction. Prior to the present time, only a few pioneering disciples and a handful of intelligent people could be regarded as freely choosing at the point of balance. Isn't that interesting? Saturn, which in a way is a planet of such control and constriction and compulsion, is involved in the idea of free choice. Only the soul, which is immersed in matter and realizes itself to be a soul, and has a mind and can use the mind, can use what is here called free choice. So only a few could be regarded as freely choosing not compelled by emotion, not compelled by instinct, but deliberating and making a choice as if from within the depth of their own consciousness, their own immersed soul nature, and maybe even from an abstracted soul nature, which rides even above the mind. Some can do that as well. So only a few in the past could be regarded as freely choosing at the point of balance the way they intend to tip the scales, rather than having the scales tipped for them by impulse. Isn't it interesting then that Mars, the planet of impulse, is in detriment in Libra, and so impulse is checked and does not run away with the individual, especially at a certain point of evolution. The way that they intend, that means the way they will to tip the scale. So it is a question now of will and mind united. And certainly when we think about Libra, we think about a sign in which will and mind are united. It is all along the hard ray line at this particular point, if we ignore the other rays, let us say, of Venus. Now, today there are countless numbers, and hence the intense activity of Saturn. At least its ray is appropriated, and its nature is appropriated by many, and is intensely, therefore, active within humanity. As we enter the first decan of Aquarius, all are entering the first decan of Aquarius, in a way, under Saturn. But those who are not yet at the stage of intelligence, who are still emotionally polarized, are, as we know, entering in a subsidiary way under the planet Venus. But the planet itself is, in a way, entering Aquarius under the first decan ruled by Saturn. And hence, the same activity, because humanity itself now stands upon the probationary path, let us say, ready to be tested. So there are many who cannot yet use Saturn, but the large number of intelligent people, the widespread intelligence, means that for many it is possible to enter more under Saturn than under the activity of Venus, more under the aegis of the mind than under the promptings of the emotions. And so increasingly, conscious choice can be made. Now, for some, it's quite a mixture, I suppose, of emotion and mind. But for others, it is increasingly a question of deciding according to that which the mind reveals and according to one's own will, based upon that which the mind reveals and perhaps by what the intuition reveals. This, the probationary path, and this is really interesting, I think, the probationary path, this Libra governs and controls. Because on the probationary path, there are so many pulls and counterpulls which have to be dealt with, and choice has to be made between the two directions, the promptings of the pairs of opposites. So this, the probationary path, governs and controls, therefore, the path of choices. This is a good way of describing the probationary path. Because in a way, those who are on the path of discipleship have made many of these choices between the material nature and the soul nature, between the personal material nature and the soul nature. They no longer have to be fighting it out so constantly. But on the probationary path, one is constantly pulled, with pulls between the pairs of opposites, soul and personality. Those on the path of discipleship have really made that choice. They have other choices which confront them, of course, and those are choices about doing something which is good or something which is even better along the path of soul influence. So this probationary path, I find it very interesting, an excellent name, the path of choices, an excellent name. Whoopsie. That's not what I wanted, did I? I didn't want that at all. That's for tonight's music for the Assumption of the Virgin meditation. An excellent name. I just want to write that, but I seem to have difficulty doing it. X name. The path of choices. Of deliberately applied purificatory procedures, which those on the path of discipleship do not necessarily cease applying, but they need not pay so much attention to it because so much of it has already been done. So they are not working with transmutation so much as with transformation. A path of choices, of deliberately applied purificatory measures, and the turning point before Scorpio, which governs the path of discipleship, can properly play its part. And that turning point is very much turning point, very much ruled by Uranus, which is so active in the reversal of the wheel. The scales fall, the scales tip at the turning point. Important for us to understand. Scales tip at the turning point. There's so much that one can extract from all of this. Yes, humanity as a whole enters into the tests of Saturn, and so DK said the next 600 or 700 years will be difficult. That's not exactly what we anticipated when singing the song about the age of Aquarius, you know, harmony and understanding, Jupiter and all the rest of it. Well, Jupiter aligning with Mars, it's like soul and personality alignment, but some of those great anticipations seem to relate more to the third and last Venus decanate. And rather, humanity will find many adjustments in its individual behavior due to group compulsion. Some of the worst applications of this have been exercised through communism and fascism. The group became everything, the individual nothing. But let's just say that even in a more sane application of group demand, it will be hard on the rebellious lower ego of lower Leo, which has a tough time according with group requirements. We see this right now in the battle that some put up against even an enlightened form of social caring or an enlightened form of socialism such as the European states seem to practice. The individual ego wants to assert itself in the recrudescence of the sixth ray and Piscean energies and will have nothing to do with the kind of discipline which a society which has mutually caring members exerts upon those members. It's Saturn, really. It's Saturn and Mars. The egoism is lower Mars. And Saturn, in the first decan of Aquarius, is saying this degree of freedom or of license we must sacrifice in order to have a harmonious society in which the members of that society actually care for the welfare of each other. Welfare has come to mean dependency. It's not that at all. Welfare is a far deeper concept, just the way peace is a far deeper concept than we might suspect. Okay. Now, we look here at the idea that the power of Mars is lessened in this sign. This is called detriment. Obviously, the planet of war and the sign of peace is not well placed from the conventional point of view. This is the sign of interlude, and Mars is temporarily quiescent because Mars always impels towards action. So this is a sign, in a way, of deliberation rather than of action. It is the consideration of the ways in which action shall take place rather than action itself. Of course, once the scales tip, once the pan falls, then indeed there is action, but there can be long periods of deciding how to act. So the usual functions of Mars are temporarily quiescent here, although you do find people who, I think, crusade, that's the Martian word, for justice, for fair play, for right social conditions. You can find social reformers with this position. But anyway, Mars is temporarily quiescent prior to gathering his forces for a renewed effort in Scorpio. In other words, it's a very strenuous battlefield in Scorpio, and we do remember how in Libra the soul gathers its strength for the next work, the imminent work in Scorpio. Renewed effort in Scorpio, or for the quickening of the spiritual life, this idea of stimulating, of putting energy into, of animating, all of these are Martian words. So for the quickening of the spiritual life in Virgo. It is also possible, we've been told, that there is such a survival modality operating on the clockwise wheel in Scorpio that the first flickerings of intuition do occur. These are evaluated. And it is possible that as one moves on the clockwise wheel in Virgo, into Virgo, if there has been a sufficient valuation, not yet the reversal of the wheel, but a sufficient valuation of the intuition and the soul's influence, then this will stimulate or quicken in Virgo the awakening of the Christ life. And this is all according to the way the wheel is turning for man. If the reversal of the wheel does occur, there will not be a clockwise sliding back into Virgo, but a deliberate, use the word there, deliberated upon, a deliberate moving forward into Scorpio, and a deliberate facing of the tests, which are quite different from the Libran life. I've known some people with the Sun in Libra and Scorpio rising, and, you know, in some ways, the first part of their life is more pleasant than the next part, more harmonious in an outer sense. They have not been so tested. The demands upon them have not been so severe. It's quite extraordinary what can happen when Libra gives way to Scorpio. The Sun said to fall in this sign, and this is interesting, because, again, neither the personality nor the soul dominates in man. Well, the Sun can stand for the personality. The Sun, in a way, can also stand for the radiant consciousness of the higher mental plane. Neither the personality nor the soul dominates in the man who is a pure Libran. I guess there are those in whom the Libran energy expresses to a greater or lesser degree, but for the person who has many planets in Libra, let us say, and let us imagine even Libra rising, this would come closer to being the pure Libran, in which the balance between soul and personality is quite even. There's another word, even. That is, as in equinox, that is a prominent Libra word. A balance is achieved, and they esoterically tune each other out. The disciple, or the human being who is trying to decide, goes neither way with full resolution. The Sun actually, of course, is a symbol of a great concentration of power, a symbol of selfhood. I'm thinking about the exaltation in Aries and the fall in Libra. The power of pure being is found in Aries, and it rises above all other considerations, the illusory ones, the lesser evaluations of identity, the lesser identifications. The highest identification is there. Here, the identity is uncertain. Let's put it let's put that down in a way. There is uncertainty of identity. Am I the soul? Am I the personality? And each time one may attempt to understand that one is one or the other, the opposite negates the conviction that one fully is one or the other. So neither the voice of the personality nor the soul is heard particularly. I guess a mixture. But as the old commentary puts it, a gentle oscillation now proceeds. No strident note is heard. No excessively strong note, I suppose. No violent coloring of the life affects. Mars is violence, and it is diminished in its power. No violent coloring of the life affects. I know not how else to translate the original phrases. And no upsetting of the chariot of the soul. And this is the soul in form. The soul which is immersed within the vehicles, the incarnated soul. Because Mars will upset, Mars will prod towards some definite and distinct powerful action, even violent action, and that does not occur here. So there is irresolution. That is what happens when you cannot decide. Indecisiveness and irresolution. Oh, irrevolution? No. Irresolution. And maybe irresolution and indecisiveness. The significance of the place of the planets in this sign will emerge clearly in your consciousness when you study them with care. And the meaning of Libra will become definitely formulated in your mind. I would find this an attractive proposition because as a person with a strong Aries energy, you know, it's always somewhat difficult perhaps to understand the sign opposite your own. And in this case, a sign which is the master of no man's land and which has so much about it which oscillates, vacillates, and is temporarily indefinite. Indefiniteness of the sign Libra. The temporary indefiniteness. Temporary. The characteristics of this sign are not easy to define because they are vacillating. They find no fixed position until a later stage of the process. There is so much indeterminate, but later, of course, great determination, because Saturn is the planet of determination, of fixing with accuracy that which is decided upon. The characteristics of this sign are not easy to define or comprehend because they are, in reality, the synthesis of all past qualities and achievements, perhaps in the first hemicycle, beginning with Aries, the synthesis of all past qualities and achievements, and any clear presentation of the pairs of opposites is difficult to get. Because, you see, people vacillate between the pairs of opposites, and they occupy positions which are along this continuum from one pole to another, and there are various positions one can occupy with a greater percentage of this opposite and a lesser percentage of that, and then a greater percentage of that and a lesser percentage of this, and sometimes in the middle, which seems to be an equal blend, which is hard to read. As regards the man upon the probationary path, or upon the verge of treading it, it might be said that his characteristics and qualities are. So we're not talking about the disciple here. We're talking about the man upon the probationary path or on the verge of treading it, remembering that Libra is this, what should we call it, path of choices. The probationary path is this path of choices. Yes, the path of choices. Constant deliberation as to the right way to go. And here we have the balance of the pairs of opposites accordingly. Balance of the opposites in Libra. So all the way from fickleness and variability, with no fixed position, reminding one somewhat of Gemini, to a secure and settled position. Choice has been made for that incarnation, and one knows where one stands. Not necessarily deciding for one or the other, but even a central position with a certain proportion of each of the pairs of opposites ruling the life. More soul, perhaps, or more personality. Imbalance, swinging from one to the other, and a number of Librans I've known have laughed when one speaks of them living a balanced life. Apparently there's a long period of year resolution and the possibility of acting out one of the poles or the other, a seeming self-contradiction which suggests something of the fourth ray, and finally a balanced life, avoiding the extremes. And I suppose if the scale does swing fairly wildly in the beginning, you can have bias and prejudice, emphasizing one of the poles rather than the other, but eventually a sense of being able to see the other person's point of view and judging accordingly, giving each of the opposites a fair share. So, you know, we have a less controlled condition in the left-hand column and a more controlled in the right-hand column. This one surprised me a little bit. Dull stupidity. I suppose it means a kind of unresponsiveness and an inability to know what to do because one is not settled in one's perspective. But eventually, as we move on the path of probation, enthusiasm comes. I'm reminded that Libra is ruled in its first decanate by Jupiter, the planet of enthusiasm. And in Virgo, wisdom has been cultivated and knowledge in Taurus. So there is this preparation for living on and expressing on the last or the second hemicycle of the circle. And the Librans are so often enthusiastic about beauty, truth, and wisdom. So enthusiastic wisdom and I suppose the eagerness to apply it with judgment, fairly, with justice in a balanced manner, from a reasonable perspective. Here's another one that's interesting, obviously relating to those who are really not quite treading the path of probation. Untrue, showy outer form, I suppose, with the intention of attracting others, because one wants the partner, one wants to be attractive. After all, Venus, in a lower sense, does rule, and one's lower ego can be invested in being attractive. So many, you know, of the very beautiful people are born in Libra, especially with Libra rising, I've noticed. So in any case, this may be pertaining more to the first decanate and the third decanate of Libra, but this has to be researched. But there is the relinquishment of bias and not trying to emphasize the outer more than the inner. So there is a balance between inner and outer, and then we will have true and correct expression, remembering that Venus conveys the fifth ray, which is interested in accuracy. So we're really looking here at two aspects of Venus, one of which is attractive and interested in all of these partnership things on the lower turn of the spiral, and the other is more balanced, true, correct, under the fifth ray. This is interesting, intrigue. The third ray of Libra is here emphasized, and we know how much can be hidden behind an apparent politeness, but then later straightforward conduct, which is more interested in truth than in manipulation to have one's way. Subtle manipulation is extraordinarily effective among some Librans. You never know what they're thinking, and they can be quite pleasant on the outer surface, but they have some other plan, and they are subtly moving towards that execution of that plan. That's intrigue. And then, of course, here, just a simple contrast here, materialistic attitudes versus spiritual attitudes. One can swing towards the personal material pole easily, but one can as easily, well, I won't say easily, after much deliberation, decide for the spiritual values. That's actually what's happening in Libra. That certainly has been emphasized to me. Really, people are in Libra, once they reach at least a reasonable degree of evolution, are attempting to decide which way they will go. Which way will they go? And this has to do with really weighing up the alternatives, the consequences, trying to see ahead all of the consequences, the third ray is involved in seeing these consequences. Well, okay, we are at the point, this particular presentation, this particular program, has been interrupted a few times, maybe you could tell. I've tried to maintain my sense of continuity here as much as possible, but we are at the end, at least, of Esoteric Astrology Adventure, 82, Section A, and on page, obviously, 250, and beginning with 251, maybe we can look at 82B, possibly, or maybe we'll get into 83. May not be possible to sustain the internet that long. We'll see how that works. And now, I'll just say one more thing. It is the balancing between the pairs of opposites which makes the man in Libra sometimes difficult to understand. You never know where he takes a stand. Eventually he does take a stand, of course, when the scales tip and when the opposites, the pairs of opposites are chosen, one of them. He appears to vacillate, but never for long and often unnoticeably. It's a great subtlety in the sign, for there's always the final balancing of the qualities with which he is equipped. Now, the question is for Librans, have they reached that point of balance? I think maybe it's even better to end here, because the decanates will require of us special attention, and it's always good, if we can, to begin with the decanates in the same program. So I'll do it this way. The balancing the pairs of opposites. He's always aware of imbalance, inharmony, too much of this, too little of that. And this very subtle and sometimes rapid adjustment may go unnoticed by others, and so it's difficult to say exactly where he stands, difficult to pin him down just the way it is, difficult to pin the third ray down. But later, once there is the decision, then you know where the Libran person stands. So often, are you with us or against us? You know, the whole question of being a traitor or being loyal, this comes in with Libra, also with the fourth ray. Finally, there will be a final balancing of the opposites, but we don't know whether the Libran has reached that point when he's ready for that type of decision. The period of life that one may be witnessing may be one of constant attempt to determine what that decision may be, and therefore irresolution may prevail in some Librans and decisiveness in others. Okay, friends, I think we are at the point. We'll just close with an om. And we'll get into the interesting question of the Libran decanates, which have some unusual rulers, I think. Jupiter, Saturn, and Mercury, according to the Tibetan. Quite different from the Venus we would expect in the first decanate, and maybe even the Uranus in the second. But Saturn, of course, is the one of the rulers of Libra, so it's justified, and Mercury of the Gemini part. We'll get into that, and at the next possible occasion. We'll talk to you soon, and, well, let's decide that Libra is an important sign.